This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is Waddle and Sylvie, WNVP Chicago.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
All right, it's Wednesday and it's 5 o'clock. That means it's time to talk to our good friend Michael Wilbon. He's brought to you by Waddle's Guy.
That's right. Brought to you by HawkAuto.com, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW. All in one place, HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day.
Woo-hoo!
Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
Michael, how you feeling today?
Good, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're trying to figure out what's going to happen tomorrow against our Bears. It's my favorite time because whenever there's a Bears game, Waddle and I both know we're going to hear from you.
That's right.
You do. That's right. That's
Are you right. optimistic?
No, not at all.
No.
I mean, come on, you got to, I mean, look, for me to be optimistic, I got to the point I was optimistic about the team 2 years ago. And even early last year, I was cautiously optimistic. Now I'm sort of, you know, hopeful but bracing for the worst. And I don't want to be that way, but I just don't know how. I mean, how good are they? What can we expect of this team? Seeing what we've seen the first four games, didn't attach a score to it, and you just looked at the play going each way. It was more like soccer, and you had to evaluate who got the best of the play. What percentage of it would the Bears have gotten the best of the play? So, of course, that's not how you judge it. You judge it by final score, so I'm happy with 3-1. But, Tom Brady and they got some injuries. You know, Tampa's got some injuries, which could help the Bears a little bit. But I'm not optimistic. That would be a little too rosy for me.
And I think the overwhelming feeling I have is disappointment. Because I get it. They're 3-1. Totally get it. But offensively, you look at what they've done, and you put the film on, and what you see is complete and total mediocrity or ineptitude.
Yeah.
And I don't see, Mike, I mean, like, I watched the film today. I watched the All-22 today, and what I saw was even worse than what I sat and watched on Sunday.
You were not a happy camper on Sunday. You sounded like me on Sunday.
It just, like... When the opposing defensive line absolutely annihilates your offensive line and eliminates your ability to run the football, and in the passing game, you really have no confidence that your route combinations or what you're doing is going to work. Like, I sat on my couch for 3 hours and felt helpless on Sunday.
I understand how somebody who, particularly somebody who understands the intricacies of offensive football, Tommy, would feel that way. I understand that Foles is familiar with everything and he had played really well the previous week. But when you come into that game, and I realize the offensive line has a lot to do with what you can do, whatever the game plan is. But when you can't you get the ball to David Montgomery in space? You don't have Tariq Cohen. Is he inept at catching the ball to the point where you can't try to any screen game? Are there not some more creative ways you can get the ball? They kept going down the field or attempting to go down the field as if they were getting the kind of protection which dictated that. I didn't understand a lot of what went on. And
I can tell you this, Mike. They're one of the worst screen teams I've seen in recent years. Like, it's small sample size. But, like...
Is that guard play? Because those guys can't pull and get out. What is that?
It was, to me, it just looked like collective failure to execute a play. Now, I'm going to give the Colts a lot of credit because that's a very disciplined, very good, playing hard defense that makes very little mistakes. Like, you won't find a Colts secondary member out of position. So they're well coached and they play well, but yeah, too many mistakes, not enough moments where you thought that the Bears offense, okay, finally we're going to get on track. They couldn't put too many things together.
Well, they're going to get another defense that's pretty damn good this week.
Yeah.
And so that's why I can't be optimistic. I tell you what, there are two plays, you talk about opportunistic. There are two plays that if they're made, one play in particular, if Khalil Mack holds on to that interception at about the 20-yard line, that's at least a field goal when it was 7-0. And there was another defensive play that had to be made. The interception with that, I thought that was an insane reversal, which cost 3 points. So in a game that wound up being, such a one-score game at the end, 6 points is a big swing. And defensively, we're not getting the turnovers that lead to scores that the Bears usually need, usually because we have an inept offense. And defensively, they've got to shoulder more of the load than they should have to. That's just the way our franchise plays. And if we're not having that sort of contribution from the defense, that's just tough for me to be optimistic.
We were talking earlier, Michael, if it's unfair to ask that much from the defense again, because they're always asked to do that. But yet, we also said that Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn, your two very high-priced guys to rush the passers, are on pace for 10 sacks total between the two of them.
Not good enough. That number's got to be 20. It really needs to be north of 20.
Yes.
They got to lead the way. But let me say this, though. From looking at how close the two of them got, I'm wondering then about the rest of the defensive line players, some of the defensive calls. When to blitz? When are you going to have to? And look, you don't want to make a defense vulnerable by just being, they're not going to come out and be, a Buddy Ryan defense and just try to kill the passer to hell with everything else. I'm not suggesting that. But it just seems to me that they've been awfully conservative with defensive play calls. Tommy, am I off base there?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, we had Yurko on the show with us earlier today as well, and I think he said, didn't he, Sylvie, that he'd like to see them be more aggressive and bring some more heat. And
yeah.
I think it would create some opportunities. But this is a defensive front that should be able, even without Eddie Goldman. Akeem Hicks is playing like a monster. He's been fantastic.
He's playing great.
He's great. But they should be able to pressure quarterbacks with their front four more than they have.
Yeah, I mean, I know that was the secret in 2 years ago in 18, was actually being able to do that without compromising the defense with, crazy blitz packages. But it's just they seem to be just a little bit off, and maybe defensively they can find their stride. They seem to be a little bit off defensively and just way off offensively. And I got to say this, I mean, it seems like they have enough playmakers, even with Cohen injured. And by the way, what is his status for the year? Is he out for the year?
Oh, yeah, he had ACL surgery this week.
He did have a surgery, okay. Yeah. Even without him, and obviously they're losing a huge playmaker there. It would seem that they've got enough playmakers to get the ball down the field. But to have 11 points at home, that's just not acceptable. I mean, the three games they won, they played a quarter each time.
Yeah, it's all smoking.
They played two great comeback quarters. And
all their stats are smoke and mirrors on offense. Like, listen, I'm as thrilled as anyone that they're 3-1. I'm just discouraged because we're in year three of this. And offensively, you just put so much pressure. Okay, year one, put all the pressure on the defense. Year two, you should start taking more of the responsibility. In fact, they went backwards. And now in year three, you're
backward again.
You're where you were yesterday and last year. And it's just not.
Yeah.
It's just discouraging.
Mike, I want to get your opinion because we've, through the COVID, when sports was stopped, and then we were very wait and see, you especially, on, hey, where is this going to go? And we've gotten very good results for the most part, where baseball has made it now to their postseason, and the bubbles in the NHL and NBA were fantastic. And now we're getting that, you know, we're going through that rough patch with the NFL. Do you believe that they will be able to correct this like the other leagues, or do you think this is the start of a bigger issue?
You know, that was our one of our lead stories on PTI today. And just what do we think we're looking at? And I just said, I'm afraid. I don't want this to happen. I'm afraid that they're staring at the precipice, over the precipice into potential disaster. And what do you do about it? I mean, we knew football potentially was going to have a bigger problem just by from sheer numbers of people in proximity with one another. We knew that was possible. And now that's becoming true. Remember, we're talking about roster sizes that, and it's not just a 53-man roster. Tommy, how many people are in a locker room now? 62, 64 players, something like that?
Yeah, easily.
So, I mean, so we're talking about upwards of 65 people. That's two times and then some bigger than a baseball roster. And then, you know, obviously, it's like four times the size of a football roster, of an NBA roster. So, man, you know, you hold your breath, and I'm sure the NFL officials, you know, executives are holding their breath because their collective breath, because what happens if you have to miss three or four games? Like, at some point do you just declare the Tennessee Titans season over? If they miss two, if they miss a second one, what happens after that? What happens in a, like, we haven't heard these pictures out there of who was it? The defensive player on the Patriots who just got
Gilmore. Fired. Yeah, Gilmore was hugging Mahomes
Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, no. I mean, and by the way, it's so unfair to have these expectations on players, on anybody, on people. Like, I wouldn't even want to walk around with that. You know, that responsibility that anybody you breathe on could wind up being testing positive for COVID. I mean, it's so unfair, yet that's sort of the nature of what they've taken on when they said we can do this and we're not going to be able to do it in the bubble, and they can't. People still ask me, why didn't the NFL have a bubble? It's like, hey, stop, pay attention. The NBA and the NHL had bubbles because they're talking about essentially their postseason.
Yeah.
They didn't go and do an entire 80-game season in a bubble, which is what we'd be asking the NFL to do with 16 games plus the playoffs. And so I don't know what you do. I think it's pretty damn impressive that they got through the first 4 weeks with as little intrusion as there was.
I think because of them starting the season on time, it provides them some opportunities if they had to. Like, they may be able to shut the entire league down for a week, maybe two, and then start it back up. And even if you're playing the Super Bowl, not on February 7th, but if you're playing it on the last Sunday of February or the first Sunday of March.
First Sunday of March. Who cares?
Right. So I think they have the benefit of time to a certain degree.
Yes, Tommy. I mean, look, they do. They do have it. And, you know, there's no more stadiums that are shared. I mean, other folks come in and have events, but it's not like, you know, all of our lives – you know, as kids and even in mine as mostly adult, when people shared stadiums, when baseball and football both had to figure out their dates and all that, you don't have that anymore. All the football stadiums are football-only stadiums. And if you did have to shut it down or you did have to declare a week that everybody was going to just sit it out and have a bye week this week, we've got too many positives, you could do that.
Yeah.
And you could push it, which speaks to your having the benefit of time. They have some wiggle room. They have some margin for error that maybe the others did not have.
When we come back, Michael, I want to ask you the question. With Theo Epstein, it's just a matter of when, not if, he's walking out that door. What grade you would give him with the 9 years that he's spent so far with the Cubs?
That's easy.
That's question for Wilbon coming
up
next.
That's easy for me.
Conversation with Michael Wilbon continues, and he made it pretty easy figure out what he's going to give Theo Epstein. We had a hot debate on the show yesterday, Michael, and then put out a poll question. 9 years of Theo Epstein, the grade you give him is in what?
The only thing I had to figure out was if I'm going to discount Theo and the team for not getting to a second World Series? That's the only question. And I'll discount them just a hair. So I go A-. If they'd gotten to a second one, not much less won a second one, I think I would have just gone flat A. Winning a second one is A++. But look, they did something that hadn't been done by any other person, any other regime, in 100 years plus. So it's A something. I don't want to dock Theo for the minus for not getting back in 17 or 18. If anything, I want to dock the players. I mean, they've got to the point now where they can't hit 200. How's that happen? You know, and I don't want to dock Theo for that. I mean, you can't just tear up. You can't just tear up a team that you've built that wins a championship where the players are at 23, 24, 25 years old. You can't do that. So I'm going to give Theo a higher grade than I'm going to give the team at this point.
How surprised are you, Mike, that this team has floundered in the postseason the way they have the last several years, not even making it last year?
Very. Because the pressure should have been off. But I say that, and I've been thinking a lot about this, because I didn't even watch the second game. I didn't even watch the Darvish game. Because I just knew they can't hit, so I'm just not going to invest myself in that. But I'm very surprised, because I thought the pressure was off. When you win like that, I just thought, wow, knowing how much pressure there was in 16. But then again, maybe the pressure of following up that, maybe the pressure of an encore is just too much. Maybe they held up, and the house held up while they were going through it, and they crushed them to get out of it. And that's very possible. I've been talking about this with, you know, just lifelong Cub fans, and we're all trying to figure it out and figure out why they went so south afterward. And maybe here's the other possibility. Maybe they just took the biggest sigh of relief in the history of baseball. They did what nobody could do. They took the biggest sigh of relief, and they just couldn't get back on track. They got distracted. And by the way, I find that sort of understandable.
It really is amazing, though, after watching years and years and years of players who have failed because of the pressure. Here you have Chris Bryant, who comes up, and all the pressure is on him as the minor league player of the year, the college player of the year. He's hyped, and he lives up to the potential, and he's the rookie of the year. And then in 16, the year that they break the curse, and the first time in 108 years, he's the MVP. Like he has never gotten back to that point.
No, and it's just stunning. I mean, Matthew's in the car with me now. He said to me 2 days ago, "Dad, what happened with Chris Bryant?" And I'm like, I have no answer. I'm shrugging, just like I'm shrugging now. He's sitting next to me because it doesn't make sense in sort of the linear way we expect sports to go, right? Particularly when you've shown greatness early and if you are healthy. Now, he's had some injuries, but not the kind of injuries you think of derailing a young career. But he was so good. They were so good in 15, too. Like, in 15, you can say, okay, they didn't have any pressure. They outperformed it. Fine. You can say that. Took the Cardinals out. It was just great. Came back facing all the pressure and faced it down. Okay, now you're like, okay, these guys, I likened it. You know what I thought they were going to do? I thought it was going to be like Tiger Woods. I remember when Tiger won his second major at Medina when he had the duel with Sergio. And Tiger won his second major, and I remember sitting in that press room in Medina thinking, this is it, man. It is on. This guy has no more pressure for a while. Like winning the second one is not even – he's done it. He's going to go off. And he did. And you often see that when guys – you know, you see that with great players. You saw it with – God knows you saw it with Jordan. But you saw it with Wayne Gretzky. You saw it with so many players in team sports, especially when the guys are kept together – they clearly like each other. They clearly.
Did we lose Michael? Yeah, let's put him on hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was amazing because they all came up and they all succeeded.
Well, and again, I give you all the stats from 2019 in the regular season, and you put all that together offensively, and you're almost mesmerized as to the fact that they didn't get to the postseason. Like all of the home runs collectively that they hit, I mean, like, they had six guys
in
21.
But we know in 19, remember, the problem was not scoring an average amount of runs.
No, they scored 10 one day and then three over the next four games.
Right, right, exactly.
Back, I'm sorry, whatever happened. I'm sitting here in bright sunshine. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to be the law. You know, we're going to be trying to explain this. You know what this is like? I mean, the one-hit wonder, the greatest one-hit wonder in sports is the 85 Bears.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
I mean, known by a single year because it was singular. And it's like, and they didn't have that kind of pressure. I mean, it wasn't, you know, 1963 to 85 was a long time. It seems longer than the 22 years because it seems like there were several eras in there. But the Cubs, man, so now it's done, right? They're just going to tear the team up. Is that it?
Well, Theo says he's going to try and thread the needle and compete for division next year and transition, if you believe that.
Well, I mean, I think he knows how to try a lot of stuff. But I tell you what, I don't want to hear anybody blame him for keeping that group together. I mean, you look at their ages now, you think, wow, they should have three more years together. If you just had half the guys performing in peak efficiency, half. When I looked up one day in late September, and, you know, I mean, Baez, Rizzo, Bryant, when all those guys were hitting barely, they couldn't hit 200. What is that? That's insane.
Mike, before we get too far along, when LeBron and the Lakers wrap up this NBA title, what will your narrative be about where LeBron is?
He's in control. He's in control of the game. He's in control of every game he plays. He's intellectually in control. He's physically in control because he still can do that at 35, and that's the shock of it. I mean, we knew what Michael was like at 30, you know, 4, 5, 6, I guess it was for him, the last three-peat. Or maybe it was 3, 4, 5. We know what Michael was like, and he was in control. But if he physically wasn't what he had been before he went to baseball. LeBron is still physically in control, right? And so, you know, I don't know if that means he'll get another. The NBA, there's young teams coming after them. You know, Dallas is coming. Denver's coming. I mean, maybe even Memphis and Phoenix. And I think those teams are a little further off. They're like 3 years, and LeBron could just be done by then. But he's in control, man. He's in control of this whole thing. And, you know, he's in control of his teammates, sending them text messages. You know, I mean, this is the new way of doing it. Michael would have gathered everybody in a room and locked them in there, and they physically would have been in the room. Now you got to reach everybody electronically. Same thing. He's mastered it. He has mastered the game. He's mastered the art of manipulation. Kudos to him. You know, they're not. I can see Miami winning, by the way, Friday. But I don't see him winning, you know, two more times to even or three.
Really quick, how high on his player rankings does Matthew have Jimmy Butler now?
I'm gonna let him answer. He's sitting right here.
Yeah,
in Matthew, the top 10.
Top 10.
Top 10.
Probably like 10.
Okay, that's pretty
good.
Sounds
like a good spot for Jimmy.
You had a ready answer for. We've been talking about Jimmy Butler. You know, I was trying to, you know, Matthew has grown up in the era of three-point fanaticism. And I couldn't wait to call him because I was on the set somewhere. And to call him and say, hey, Jimmy Butler just controlled a game without shooting a three.
Right.
That stunned you, didn't it?
No, he doesn't shoot threes. So.
Well, he did, but he still controlled the game. I don't know that there's anybody else who can control the game, an all-court player, without shooting threes.
LeBron.
No, LeBron still shoots his threes. He still takes his.
Well, he was shooting some long threes last night at the end of the game.
He was shooting some bombs.
Yeah,
I mean,
they weren't going in.
Steph Curry and Jamal Murray have changed the whole geometry of what NBA shooting is. But I LeBron is it's just a wondrous time for him. And you know, the question is, can they stay healthy? There's not going to be a lot of personnel changes before the next season, whenever that starts, because of money issues, and we don't know where the world is going, and people just aren't going to change like that. But so that means they should come back with a team that's pretty close to what they've got now, or maybe even a little improved. And I don't know whether the Nuggets, Mavericks, those other teams I'm talking about on the come can chase down LeBron while he's still in control, man. And if he's physically, if he avoids injury, it's going to be hard to see somebody catching him next season.
Michael, Matthew, good stuff. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right, you guys. Be well.
There you go, the Wilbons together. And we've got Mark Giangreco in the First Midwest Bank studio.
Was that the traveling Wilbons?
It was.
Hey,
yeah.
Very good. Marky will join us courtesy of Chicago Cut Steakhouse next. Not only can you hear Mark Giangreco on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, you can watch Waddle and him inside the First Midwest Bank studio on Twitch.
Yeah, Twitch.
Twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago.
You've missed quite a yelling match in here.
What? Yeah,
well, here's the deal. Let me lay this out for you.
Okay.
Both Abdallah and I bet, you know, we were cheering for the Astros, right? We had money on the Astros to win. Like, as I told you, if I win my bet, I'm not going to go buy an Astros hat. I'm not a big Astros fan, but I played them today. So when they got up 7-4 in the bottom of the sixth, I cashed out.
Weak.
It was a $10 bet that was going to pay $19.25, and I cashed out for $17. I left $2 and change on the table. And these guys spent like 20 minutes calling me dirty names. And
it's
I said,
bet $1,000.
Right, I know, but I said to the guys, I said, hey, no one ever went broke taking a profit.
See,
I said, why don't you just take a profit? Why don't you cash out right now?
You little millennials in there going soft, weak. See, that's why no one ever beats the house. That's why everybody loses their house
and
when they gamble. Because it plays to the macho thing, like, I'm not bailing.
Sylvie, you know what the
score
is?
You also can't win big that way.
7-7?
8-7 A's.
Whoa!
So it's either win big or
with the bases loaded and one out. Yeah.
Go home to the home you used to own.
I almost, because those guys were goading me for being a kitten.
This is the best
part. A kitty. It was plus 800. I almost put $5 down on the A's to win, and I just didn't do it.
And immediately, here come the A's.
Here come the A's.
A 3-run home run.
See,
it's amazing how much joy you can get out of a $10 bet.
I don't gamble at all. Because
well, you need to.
I have such an obsessive compulsive personality that would really damage me.
Really?
So I stay away from
that's smart.
Anything
that's maturity.
Even remotely related to gambling.
You gamble in other ways.
Yes, I do.
Very much so.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, last night
and not with house money either.
Last night was another good example of why I never play point spreads in the NBA. Like, if you want to play the NBA,
the
you play the money
end.
Line, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
It was.
What was the number? 7.5?
It was 7.5.
And then Hero hit that last three?
Yeah. Yep. There were a lot of guys on Twitter screaming and yelling, going out of their minds.
This just in. A hero is more than a sandwich. Tyler, getting it done.
Did you guys hear that too yesterday?
That's just silly.
He's got a lot of pre-scripted stuff.
This just in. A hero is more than a sandwich.
Mama, there goes that sandwich.
Doesn't that, like, it may be scripted, Mark, but doesn't that hit the edit room floor then after you script it and you go through it and you're like, you know what? The hero / sandwich line, probably not going to be
I know, it's
good
pretty weak, and I love Mark Jackson. I think he's great, but that's a little weak. That's a little forced.
9-7-8.
Yeah.
See, now you're being a Richard about it. Before, down the hall, don't worry, Adam.
Oh,
I'm still rooting for you. I'm rooting for the Astros. I still want the Astros to win. I want you to make your money. And in here, you're being a Richard about it. What's our number one rule?
Don't be a Richard.
And now you're being a Richard.
Well, but you were calling me a pussycat, like, over and over again.
Whoa. Yeah, I would get that. Just
I can come back Friday. You know, I can come back Friday if you guys want to just...
So they were yelling at each other during the break,
down
Mark?
The hallway with the mics closed, I could hear them screaming like a little...
Over $10.
Little rabbit.
I can confirm this has been going on for at least a half an hour.
Yeah.
We were on the same side. We were on the same team.
Okay.
Until you started rubbing it in.
You guys were talking about...
Timeout. I told you what I was going to do. I took a profit and you guys started calling me dirty names. Is that not what happened?
Yeah, but then you said you were still rooting.
No. How did it start? You started calling me dirty names.
And we'll be back after this.
Well, I thought you played in the NFL. I thought you were tough.
You called me dirty names. So no. That's not about that.
Tommy over the middle.
No, you were telling everyone that it was me picking on you. You were the one.
You drew first blood.
I thought you were Tommy
you
over the middle.
You drew first blood.
Not Tommy half
you
measure.
You drew first
not
blood.
Not Tommy half
heart attack,
you sounded like
down.
Lee Elia there for a minute.
You drew first blood.
So Black and Abdallah, they're screaming and yelling, go big or go home. How big are you losing? What'd you put?
$10.
That's my point. I mean, come on.
Cash out for
$3. I put more than
$3
on the table. I left under $3 on the table.
Unless it's in the thousands, you need to show.
We're arguing about $2.70
right now. That's what I mean. Like, here's Tom Waddle, who had a successful football career. He's been one of the most likable sports personalities.
He drew first
blood. As a former Bear
ever. He reads three spots a break.
Yeah. He's got a 30-year multi-dimensional. Conventional media
he's got
career,
a
and he's cashing out a $10 bet
because you know what?
$7.
No, I get it. Look,
and I won.
Look,
I won. It was a good decision. Look, all decisions, big and small, are good decisions.
Sometimes
if they come
you got to fold them. He was also a finance major at Boston
That's
College.
Right. I completely understand it.
He knows what he's doing.
Ever went broke taking a profit.
When you have to open up the yellow pages to Fountain Guy, I get it. You got to take all the wins you can. I understand.
Wow.
I get it. I'm not. You know, I'm not going to judge. I get it.
Yeah, my wife said the other day on television, we watch Waddle. My wife goes, is that Waddle's house on TV?
It is. It
and
is.
Said,
for the
yes,
Unilock
it is.
Commercial?
And I her.
Yeah.
Really? They
yeah.
used your house?
I'm not getting paid for it because it was the previous owner who.
You know, my house was in Uncle Buck for
was
like
it?
A split second right at the opening of the movie.
Did you get any cash?
$500 for them to put big floodlights in our yard.
Do you know when Ice Harvest came through? I believe it was the movie with John Cusack. I know I sound like Cap because I'm telling the story more than once, I'm sure. But they came by and they did like a site search, and they came by to decide where possibly they could film some of the movie in different mm-hmm. houses. And one of my houses I had several years ago, someone knocked on the door and said, hey, I'm with, you know, Paramount or whatever production company and wanted to know if you'd be interested or even consider us taking over your house for like 3 months.
Well, listen.
We said no.
The house directly across the street from me in Evanston was the Uncle Buck house.
Right.
They paid them $50,000 to use their house.
Back then.
Repainted it and put in a new lawn.
Yeah.
And they wanted to tear down the wallpaper in their foyer in the Coes. The people said, no, this is antique wallpaper. They built a hallway inside the hallway so he could repaper it. And then, you know, the scene where the crazy neighbor comes in is dancing with John Candy and they break everything in the living room. They recreated that room at New Trier West in the gym so they wouldn't actually damage the real living room. So, yeah, back then, that's the 80s or early 90s. And, $50,000 to use your house.
That's,
you just move out for a couple months.
Yeah.
Nice.
People still go to the Home Alone house and take pictures
every day,
in front of it. Yes.
Day and night.
Can you imagine living there now? It just
and the church there, too.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's
what's on your mind today? What's been going on?
We're allowed to ask
office?
That question now. We weren't several months ago.
I heard the Wilbons talking about Jimmy Butler and the NBA Finals, and I'm sitting there going, you know, ABC and the NBA need to conspire to rig it so there, you know, is a Game 5 and a Game 6. And this takes me back, and I'm just kidding, of course, but this takes me back to where I was half kidding when I was working at NBC. It was Lakers-Bulls. In the finals, and Dick Versace was my co-host. We're standing on the floor in the old Chicago Stadium, and I go, you know, I think the NBA and NBC are conspiring to extend this series because Hugh Hollins is going to be reffing this game, and you know, he hates
he didn't
the
want
Bulls.
Any piece of that, did
and
he?
Versace is looking at me, and his turban hair came undone, you know, and oh. David Stern, I think it was Don Olmeyer at the time, they called. That was one of my first suspensions in town, actually. But
was Dixie's hair real?
Yes, it was just he just wrapped it around.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in the later years, he just cut it short and pulled it back in a ponytail. It looked great. I don't know why he was wrapping it.
How long did you get suspended for?
I think that might have been a week, a couple days.
Wow.
That was a minor one.
What'd you do with your time off when you would get suspended?
I would travel. I do the suspension tour. Like my
would
last
you get
suspension,
paid or was it a suspension
no,
without
the
getting
last
paid?
One was 2 weeks without pay. All the other ones were with pay, so
that's like just an extra vacation.
Yeah, it was great. I just hop in the car and drive around, go visit people. It was cool. Yeah, I'm due for another one pretty soon. That'll be the last one.
Mark, yesterday on the show, you know, we were paying tribute to Eddie Van Halen. I'm sure you have a story or two. And I also want to ask you the story that I ask you the question that I asked the guys about that one thing that brings you back in time. So hold on to that thought. More with Mark.
I know where you're going.
He's brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, LaSalle on the River. The weekend is going to be fantastic. The patio is open.
Let's do this.
They roll out the red carpet. Call Chicago Cut today and make your reservation.
I might have to swing by Saturday night.
More with Markey next. Markey Greco's in the First Midwest Bank studio. You can watch him and Waddle on Twitch. It's brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. Pay tribute to Eddie Van Halen.
So why are we doing Blue Oyster Cult? Come on now.
We did Eddie Van Halen and Van Halen all yesterday afternoon.
You know, because of the pandemic and everything else that's going on, every loss like this is, it hurts even more. You know, it's more profound. It's just, it's ridiculous. And so immediately, when you start talking about Eddie Van Halen, then you got to make up the list of the greatest guitar players of all time, and he's got to be top five. And I think that the general consensus is Jimi Hendrix is one, and then
I put Prince in near the.
Well,
I
know you would. He's not on my list, of course.
Well, of course not, because you don't like him.
You go Jimi Hendrix one, Eric Clapton two, then maybe you go Mark Knopfler, you go Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page. My favorite is Carlos Santana. He's got to be on the list, but you know. A little farther down, everybody forgets Terry Kath from the band Chicago. All guitar players always put him in the top five, but Eddie Van Halen for sure. And to see his son, Wolfie, be able to play as well, almost as well as he did. But see, here.
So I saw a bunch of those lists yesterday. Jeff Beck is high.
Yeah, too. I mentioned Jeff Beck.
Yeah, Jeff Beck is, so like you said, like you wouldn't think when you go through like Clapton, Hendrix, mm-hmm. Waddle said Prince, but I looked at it and I'm like, oh, Jeff Beck. I didn't think to put, so I had to go back and listen and be like, oh, yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Then you have people chiming in saying, well, classical guitar players are better than all of them. Well, that's
Stevie Ray
not
Vaughan.
True. Stevie Ray Vaughan that's is spectacular. But
Chuck Berry, no?
Well, he started it all, but that was pretty basic stuff.
Rolling Stone has B.B. King high up there, too, in the top 10. Yeah.
Well, in any event, for me anyway, when you see these kind of things happening, they're all part of your childhood, they're part of your young adulthood, and they're younger than me.
He was 65. He had battled throat cancer for a long time.
Well, you notice he had the trademark. He'd stick his cigarette on the end of the neck of his guitar, and it'd be going while he played. Well, you know, lung cancer is a horrible thing. But Valerie Bertinelli, his ex-wife, had an incredible tribute on Twitter, and his son as well. So, you know, and there you go. There's another example. His brother Alex, they feuded the entire time. They wasted so much negative energy hating each other.
We said that yesterday. I mean, the fact that David Lee Roth was gone, Sammy Hagar comes in. It's all bands kind of go.
And then
they come
and go for after the first time they had the fallout too with Sammy.
Yeah.
Then David would be back, and then Sammy would be back, and
that's always
tours.
Right. That's always the argument with Van Halen, who was better. And I'm a David Lee Roth guy.
I am too. I'm an
original. He was a flamboyant performer, and he had a unique voice. Sammy Hagar, great guy. It was a little harder, rougher, I thought, presentation. But, David Lee Roth.
I liked it all. To me, they just kept going, though.
Yeah, but he was such a diva, David Lee Roth. He'd stay in a separate hotel, and he was a big problem. But that happens not only with musical acts, but, you know, with family businesses, too. It's a shame that you fight with your siblings.
Do you know how old, speaking that Eddie Van Halen was 65 when he passed away, do you know how old Sammy Hagar is?
I don't know, but he's so rich selling his vodka and his tequila.
How old is he?
72.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How about watching today's game? Jim Cott was one of the analysts. He's 81.
Really?
And he sounds great. He's terrific. He's a Buck Showalter.
It's like Hubie Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, Hubie Brown.
Porcelana Man, we used to call him. He's got that white, shiny skin.
Oh, yeah.
Remember how long Dr. Jack used to do the games, too?
The coolest. With a big disco outfit.
Dr. Jack Ramsey, yeah.
Buffalo Braves, Portland Trailblazers.
He had to be in his 80s while he was doing, late 80s maybe even, when he was doing some of the games. So, I asked the guys earlier, Mark, what is there a song, is there a movie, is there something that brings you back to your favorite time? It could be anything.
Well,
it could be in your college years. It could be when you're first in Dayton and you're
Frankie Valli's playing and you're
Well, if you want to talk about Van Halen, with Debbie something.
Yeah. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be Van Halen.
Right. No, but I'm saying.
What is the number one trigger for you?
Yeah, just to preface it, for people in Chicago, Van Halen, it's Jump, because that was the theme for the Cub games on WGN, for the day games.
In 1984,
Yeah. For me, John Whistler's basement every time I hear Led Zeppelin.
Because Whistler.
Led Zeppelin was brand new, and John Whistler, he was the first guy to have a card. He had like a Triumph Spitfire.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, man, and he was 75 going on 18. He was so cool. So John Whistler's basement, every time I hear Led Zeppelin, and summertime in the Canadian beaches is all things Chicago, you know, 25 or 6 to 4, all their early hits.
Sure.
So that's for me. Shirkston Beach in Canada, right across the bridge in the summertime.
Are you wearing that Speedo with a zipper on it?
Oh,
like
yeah,
you talked
absolutely
about in the promo that's going around?
Yep. Speaking of that stuff, Sylvie, I know you do a lot of manscaping commercials.
Yes.
Do you see the one that's online? Obviously, it can't be for broadcast. It's Gronk seemingly naked behind a hedge and his girlfriend sitting at the pool. And he's like, honey, I can't find my balls. And she goes, they're buried in your bush there, in your thick bush. And they keep going back and forth with that.
I like how then you recite the commercial.
Right,
like he don't dump that.
He goes, you can't say this on the radio, but here's what they say.
No. This is why I'm here, because I can say this on the radio. I can't say it on TV.
You can't, though.
So anyway, look out for that.
What Manscaped.com has been able to do, like Major League Baseball teams are now using them as the official grooming tool. I think the 49ers have.
You mean the groundskeepers are using it?
I'm just saying, like, they are so mainstream now, and their advertising campaign has been so good. It's amazing. It really is. And even through everything I went through this summer, I still had to keep manscaping. Even though the top of my head, not necessarily.
So were you surprised that, like,
really? So your hair fell out on your head during treatment, but pubes were locked in.
But I didn't lose anything on my legs, my arms, and downstairs.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because maybe all you people at Restore and all, if you're doing hair transplants, maybe you go pubes on the head and stay there.
All right.
They don't fall out. What?
Do you have a Bears prediction for us? There's no easy segue.
That word.
Well, Gronk is playing tomorrow.
How about
a Bears prediction for us?
How about curly, kinky body hair? Can we go with that? As opposed to long head of hair? Hey, Buccaneers.
You want to go on another tour?
Where are your Buccaneers? Never mind.
Don Ohlmeyer on line two.
Who is this guy in Chicago?
Oh.
I'm going to say the game's going to be closer than most people think, but the Bucs are going to win.
I think it is, too, but I think in large part because the Bucs don't have a lot of their weapons available to them.
Yeah. I think they're going to pull it out late.
Like the Bears are.
The Bears will get an early lead, and then Brady will come back with a couple touchdowns, and, you know, that'll be it. And Khalil Mack will have a chance at another interception and drop it.
Oh, no. Come on, Mark.
You asked for my prediction.
Yes.
I'm painting a terrible picture.
You gave it to us. All right. Well, we will talk to you Friday. And we're going to recap the game on Friday, don't forget. Be in Bears post-game mode.
I would think so. Because then it would be a football show, right? At 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you guys got coming up next?
Adam? Oh, tons of football. We're going to talk to our old friend Jordan Cornette. How about that? 7:15 for old friend Jordan Cornette.
Very cool. Is it a full ride, 6 to 8 tonight?
Oh, 6 to 8. We're taking you into, I believe it's Dodgers-Padres.
Yeah, how much more money do you think you can lose in two hours?
I don't know. There's a few more baseball games tonight and 12 MLS
he's
games.
He's betting MLS soccer games.
Hey, fire Sporting KC tonight. Hey,
Waddle take cashing the out.
Nobody ever has gone poor taking a profit. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Who was first to say that?
Somebody that's got a lot of money.
That's true. Thank you to Mark Gene Greco, brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse, Michael Wilbon, and the one and only good kid, Yurko. Thanks to Abdallah and Black. They're coming up in a short 2 minutes. For Waddle and Gene Greco, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Wednesday night.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No high from you.
What?
No high from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all a good night.